Welcome to Nell and Matt's Obsolete Movies, the podcast where we revisit movies from our 20 plus years of collecting films on obsolete formats, aka films from the VHS era. And our film for this episode is Teachers from 1984, and we have it on VHS. New old stock. Had to unwrap the shrink wrap, and it did have a Walmart, remnants of a Walmart price sticker on it, but not quite sure where we got it from. Teachers from 1984, starring Nick Nolte, Jo Beth Williams, Judd Hirsch.
Ralph Macchio
as the ethnic spunky kid.
That was like his bread and butter for a few years, as being the ethnic
spunky kid. And he certainly is in this film. Also, Crispin Glover and Morgan Freeman has a small part in the film, and Richard Mulligan. And we're going to talk about all those people. But yeah, so this film, Teachers from 1984, which again, not many people saw when it was new, but... So I guess we should explain the plot really quick. So Nick Nolte is the kind of washed up mid-career teacher who was once great and idealistic and is now cynical and frequently drunk. There's this amazingly bizarre opening sequence to the film where... You know, all these, like, prison guards, but they're just security officers, let students into the school. And the main office of the school is, like, a 70s precinct house.
Yeah.
Like, it's that. It's a precinct house, a New York City precinct house from a 70s movie. But it's the main office in the school. And the secretary, in referring to Nick Nolte's character, is like, oh, he wouldn't come in on a Monday.
Yeah.
And so it's this super surreal, super cynical film about this failing school that's being sued and the kids are out of control. And at one point, like, Crispin Glover's character bites one of his teachers. There's another teacher who's just does ditto sheets all day, and his desk doesn't even face the classroom. The students look away from him and he just sits there and reads the paper all day. And that's instruction. And the place is falling apart and completely out of control, and they're being sued because the kid graduated and didn't know how to read.
So I wouldn't say it's completely out of control, because if you're a fan of, like, late 80s, early 90s teachers films, like, those films, it's completely out of control, where, like, gangs are running the hallways and things like this. So there is
there is, like, Lean on Me.
Yeah,
so which there's a sequence in the beginning of that film that is so violent.
Yeah.
And I saw it at such a young age. It still haunts me. And I for my students in the teaching and film class, I did not want to subject them to that sequence, to be honest with you. So I kind of didn't even bother thinking about putting it on the syllabus.
So in the sense of, like, compared to some other films that come later... You know, it is not as out of control as some other films that come later.
Yes.
So I will push against that comment with you.
Mm-hmm.
So to go back to the beginning, though, it is interesting because the kids are waiting to get into the school and they have to undo all the gates to let the kids get into school. And so you're right, it does have this feeling of a jail, because the beginning sequence is all of them, just the security guards unlocking each gate and letting each child in, each group of kids in, and then... I've literally never have experienced in my 20-some years of education having the such a busy front office as it does in this movie.
Yeah, it's so ridiculous. Really, like I said, it looks like a precinct house. There's a kid who's been stabbed.
Yeah.
And the... Judd Hirsch plays the...
Vice principal,
who was, like, also once the idealistic teacher.
Yeah.
Who then, you know...
Raj.
Who then turned to admin, got all cynical, and is now just a company man. And is part of the problem.
Yes.
This school. And so this kid gets stabbed, and people are like, you know, this kid's bleeding? And they're like, yeah, we're taking care of it. And he calls an ambulance, and the kid says... I don't want an ambulance. He's like, oh, it's not for you. It's for the insurance company. You know what I mean? And so it is this every... And I think this is where the film, as product of time and place, which I think we need to talk about, reveals almost every cynical attitude we as a nation have about teaching in schools.
Yeah. I think, so I think we're going to disagree about this film on some points. But the thing about it that still to this day amazes me, is that it talks about teacher burnout. It talks about mental health issues for both teachers and students. It talks about quality of education. It talks about making sure that you're meeting student accommodations. It talks about lack of funding, overcrowded classrooms, security in schools, and is security needed? How do you manage a child who obviously has mental health issues in a school setting? How do you deal with violence in a school? How do you deal with drugs? It covers all of those things, right? Which are these really amazing bureaucracy and dealing with having to do, and also having a school that's massive that has thousands of kids. How do you deal with that level of bureaucracy? It has all these things that we still talk about today, but it kind of tries to put it all in one film. And it doesn't work. Because it tries to sandwich all of this stuff into one film.
Yeah, well, I think for me, there's actually an article that I have my students in my teaching film class will be reading later in the semester called The Worm and the Apple by Stephen Thompson. And the argument that he makes in that film, well, two points he makes in that essay that I think are really fascinating and reference specifically to teachers. One, the film came out a year after the Nation at Risk study, which right. Maybe you could explain that a little better than I can.
I know I haven't read it here. So, you know, basically the United States was falling behind in reading and math as compared to other
industrialized countries. Yeah.
So, there's like, they look at the data, there's an assessment that's used, and they look at the data. And so with that, the United States kept falling behind. And the question was, why the United States, one of the most powerful countries in the world, why are we behind all these other countries? Which sparked this Nation at Risk report.
And one of the big problems, of course, was teachers.
Yes.
They said, this really negative rhetoric about, you know, it's the bottom third from high school and college that go on to teach, and that you can't get good candidates for teaching, and all of this, like, it's one of those studies on education that kind of finds a magic bullet.
Right.
And sort of ignores everything else.
Right.
So the Thompson article makes a point that study, which was a big deal in 1983, came out in 83, teachers came out in 84. And then the other argument that he makes, which I think is fascinating for how I view the film, is that if you have a film about education, what's the enemy? Mm. Right. If you have a protagonist, what's the antagonist going to be?
Right.
And what he argues is, in this film, the antagonist is schooling itself.
Yeah. Yeah, because you get some other films, it's going to be the students. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's the principal. Sometimes it's bureaucracy. Parents, of course.
Yes.
You know, it's usually students or parents. But in this one, I think, yes, it's schooling.
In general, not that Ralph Macchio's character's parents are great people and they don't understand.
Right.
And of course, even so Joe Beth Williams plays a former student of Nick Nolte's who's now an idealistic young attorney who's leading this crusade, this lawsuit to try to reform education because this kid graduated from this high school not knowing how to read or write. And the administration is just sort of stonewalling her. They're doing depositions in the school, which is a lovely plot device. And the literary administrator is, well, we can't actually remember if this student was ever here. We don't know where the records are right now, you know. And so there, this like weird gamesmanship. You also have like these weird subplots. There's the Laura Dern is playing a student who's sleeping with a phys ed teacher, and she gets pregnant by the phys ed teacher, and and so you have this, they're all kind of terrible, unlikable people.
Yeah.
You know, even when we meet Nick Nolte's character, who's kind of a super teacher, but a burned out super teacher, you know, he's drunk. Well, he's hungover in bed with a woman who thinks he's an airline pilot. You know, and that's how he woos her into bed, because he obviously wouldn't have gotten her her into his bed if she knew he was actually just a teacher.
Which now, though, you're like, wait, a teacher? They have benefits. They have
retirement. You know, maybe it is something
now
desirable.
You'd be like, wait, a teacher?
But then it's just part of his lameness.
Yeah.
And so then he comes, he's hungover, the heater is busted in the school, so the kids are all, like, freezing.
Which I had to laugh, because that is such a part of K through 12 education, of your classroom is never the temperature you want it to be. I just had to laugh at that one, because I actually had a situation when I was a first grade teacher where I actually took cardboard and taped it around the vent.
Because it was too hot.
Because my room was 98 degrees, because we were not that far from the massive...
The boiler,
boiler. So that part, it made me chuckle a little bit, because it's definitely a memory I've had in the past.
And, you know, and there's, I think, other parts of the cynicism of this film. It is John F. Kennedy High School.
Yes.
And John F. Kennedy High School in 1984... Which, in real life, it was an abandoned school in Columbus, Ohio.
Yeah.
But in 1984, it was this, like, early 20th century building that, as part of the sort of mise-en-scène of the film, everything is drab and tacky.
Yeah.
The fashion the teachers wear, drab and tacky, and they're not stylish. This building just looks... today it's like an Urban X video on YouTube. You know what I mean? But they shot this, and it was an abandoned building, but this is what schools are like now, or whatever, or this is what urban schooling is like. You know, and you have also the teacher's lounge in it, which is the setup, which is maybe the most brightly lit, nicest space anywhere in the film that's not dreary.
And they could smoke.
And they were smoking and... sneaking sips of booze, and one of the teachers has a snub nose 38 that she carries around in her briefcase because this school's, you know, out of control, these kids. But, which I think again reveals, later in the decade you had other films that are much harsher and much more violent about schooling, and, you know, 1999's Light It Up, where they go back to a school like that, and then the students finally revolt and whatever. But yeah, I think for me, it does take these issues and tries to take on too many of these issues. But the fact that the school itself and everything about the school culture is what's wrong. And, you know, in 1984, you know, the Reagan administration that, you know, popular mantra that people still say, you know, nothing makes people panic. What did Reagan say? Nothing makes people panic more than somebody saying, I'm from the government and I'm here to help. You know? And I think this film is an extension of that attitude.
Yeah, I think we also have to think about, like, one of the articles I read about it said that it kind of compared it to MASH, the film.
Yeah.
And to some extent, the TV series of trying to take a very serious issue and you add, like, comedy and lightness to it to try to bring out how difficult the situation was, right?
Yeah.
And so it doesn't work so well.
Yeah, and it's also, the metaphor is that it's a war zone.
Right, right.
If it's MASH.
Yeah.
And it's a hopeless situation.
Yeah. So it doesn't... I think that trying to have that touch...
Mm-hmm.
around education doesn't work very well. And, you know, the thing about it that gets me is that there are actually things that I really like about this film, actually, that I don't know necessarily you like about this film. But there's actually really... If I was doing pre-service teachers, I might show them this film.
Really?
Because I think there's some things that are never discussed. Right, things that are never discussed as you're learning to become a teacher. For example, what if a student does try to attack you, right? And so in this scene, a teacher's bit by a student. And Alex, played by Nick Nolte, runs in to try to save him. And that is a reality for teachers. There might be a time in your life when you're a student attacks you.
Yeah.
They could try to hit you, throw something at you, slam something. We actually had a friend who had a student who threatened to kick her in the stomach while she was pregnant. Mm. Like, this is the reality. Like, so there's some things in here that feel so, so real, right? Mm. Like, what do you do when you have, well, actually something I was facing this week. What do you do when there's nobody out and you have to take on additional duties? And as
and you can't find subs.
And you can't find subs. And you're the principal, the vice principal, trying to figure this all out. And you're a teacher asked to do additional duties. What's it mean to be in a toxic teacher's lounge where you have people who might be discussing things that aren't great, that go against what you believe? What do you do about personal burnout, right? Like, if you've been doing something for 15 years, as we learn about Nick Nolte's character, Alex, that he's been doing this for 15 years. You hear early in his career, he designed like a reading program and all this other stuff that he no longer does because lack of funding.
Yeah.
And what do you do in that situation where you actually do want to help, but everything that you do is kind of stopped because of bureaucracy or lack of funding or other things happening? Or even the fact that the classrooms look like they have around 40 kids.
Yeah.
I counted. There was like four or five rows and it looked like 8 to 10 kids in a row. What do you do when you have 40-some kids that you have to worry about? So the thing that gets it for me is that, like, these are very real things that teachers have to face. But it was just so, like, as a teacher, if you're watching it, and I think it's more so impactful for K to 12, because I do think K to 12 functions differently than college.
Mm-hmm.
And so watching it from that lens, you're like, I get it. Like, I get things that are that kind of speak to me at a certain level.
Yeah, but I guess on the other hand, for me, is the cynicism is also, it does play into the super teacher myth.
Mm-hmm.
Because ultimately, the two really good teachers, you know, not the teacher that died. That's the fun thing, is that I remember in the 90s the urban legend of the teacher that just passed out worksheets and died while reading the paper and nobody noticed till the end of the day.
Yeah.
That's in this film. I don't know, that's still an urban legend.
Ditto.
But ditto. That there is a super teacher. You know, the two super teachers are finally Nick Nolte, who, sorry, spoiler, but it's not really on streaming services. He can't watch this movie anyway. That he gets it back together and the lawyer convinces him by stripping naked in the hallway to say, look, I believe in you, or something, which is totally surreal. Also, a student gets shot to death in the hallway by the police.
Yeah.
And then they jump to the next scene, which is the other super teacher, played by Richard Mulligan, who is the escape mental patient.
Yes.
And
however, let's go back to difficulty of finding subs.
Yes. But the escape mental patient.
He's not an escape mental patient. He's a day patient.
He's an outpatient. He's a mental patient.
Yes.
And he, you know, dresses up as George Washington and Abraham Lincoln. And then, you know, which is funny because in a way, like, some of that pedagogy is a legit pedagogy. Like, you can have students act out things and be active learners, one. But, again, part of that cynicism, it's part of Teach for America and the Bill Gates stuff, right? The people who can fix education are not people with education degrees or education backgrounds.
110%.
Those are the people you bring in who really can fix the problem, not the actual teachers.
Yeah.
Which, again, for me, is part of this film's deep cynicism.
Yeah.
And that, yes, it is very honest about some of these problems, but the super teacher can fix it because the super teacher is the super teacher.
But I'll push back in the sense that he's not Michelle Pfeiffer type super teacher, right?
Yeah.
I think there is that.
The
Dangerous Minds, Freedom Writers, Lean on Me, you know, like those kind of like super teachers who he's kind
who
of.
Who can save the non-white students,
correct,
let's be honest
correct,
with
correct,
that.
Correct. I think in the sense of like, yes, he wants to be a super teacher or he gets back some of his drive. But it's almost like remembering that he can make an impact for me.
Yes.
So I think in the sense of like some super teachers that you see, I don't think he's as over
this
the top
is,
of some of the super teachers.
This is true.
See.
And I guess for me is like where this film messes with me too is there is something very earnest and very honest about going into education.
Yeah.
And that you do want to invest in the lives of other people.
Yes.
And it is this job that is built around service. And yet this is such a pathetically bad film.
Well, it is a
that
weird...
That is very earnest and melodramatic.
Yes.
In its... But also really cynical in its portrayal of that, almost for me, feeling like sacred drive to...
Yeah, so
become an educator.
I think that's also the problem with education films. It tries to create these microcosms, and they try to stuff everything into those microcosms, right? And so, like, the most boring film ever is going to be that teacher who shows up every day, 30 minutes early, lesson plans ready, greets her kids or his kids, happy to see their children, just have good lessons, and then, you know, pack up and leave for the day. No one wants to film that, right? Because that's, like, completely...
That's not dramatic. There is no enemy.
And there's no enemy. It's completely boring. Like, oh, I have a copy... The enemy might be that the school has copy limits, you know, this quarter.
We only have so many handouts,
You can't do color. Or the laminator's broken again. Like, no one wants to do that film, right? And so I can understand nobody wants to do that film. Which is, for the vast majority of teachers, is what life really is. And then, you know, you do have these situations that might pop up that cause you some difficulty. So I get that dramatic tension has to be brought in, and you do have to build in all these other things that happen with it. But I will say, I do appreciate it touching on some of these things. Also touching on the fact that there are a variety of type of teachers. There are dittos. And that's the joke, is the teacher who dies, no one knows his name. They call him Ditto because every day he just makes a ton of copies.
Which is a dated reference.
It's a dated reference.
A Ditto machine was the thing before Xeroxes.
Yes. Yeah.
And so actually there's a professor in college that when I talk about how... That professor was kind of checked out.
Yeah.
I would always say he gave Xeroxes of Ditto sheets. His exams were Xeroxes of Dittos. And people, oh my God, that's so old. But yeah. So Ditto, that was the name of the machine before the Xerox machine.
And there,
before the laser printer technology took over, was the Ditto. And so, yeah, so there's that teacher.
I mean, so they do some good teacher tropes, right? So there is that teacher who just kind of comes in, makes her copies, and that's all kids do all day. Then there's the teacher who's really dedicated. Then there's the teacher who struggles with classroom management. There's a teacher who's obviously afraid of her children. She brings a gun to school with her. There's the cynical teacher who is like, I teach social studies. Why should I teach reading? It's not my business. It even gets into principal tropes slightly, because the vice principal obviously is the one running the school, is overworked, is super cynical, and you have the principal trope of not knowing what's happening in the school.
Yes, I don't know these students' names. And,
and spending the day in his office relying on other people to run the school. So it does do a gambit of teacher tropes and principal tropes, or at least administrator tropes. And so the superintendent is power hungry and wants to, you know, move forward in her career.
You even have the union rep whose big fight is going to be, we're not going to work at 7:30. It's going to be 7:38. That's what we're going to do.
8 minutes back.
We're going to get that 8 minutes back and not, you know, anything to do with quality of education.
Right.
Which, again, deeply cynical film.
Deeply cynical film. But I do think, you know, as you mentioned, so there's Nation at Risk that comes out then, which, of course, leads us to No Child Left Behind, which then leads to Common Core, which then leads to Race to the Top, and whatever the next thing is going to be.
And whatever the next thing that's going to be that comes out of, we're in a crisis. You know, I mean, there was the crisis in 58 when the Russians launched Sputnik.
Yeah.
And obviously Life magazine did that thing about how can they do this? Everybody in the world is so much smarter than us, and our kids are just so broken.
But I think a part of it is there's a deep cynicism towards education in general. And partially the reason why is because we've all gone through education and we all have opinions on it.
Yeah.
You know, a majority of us have gone through K-12 education of some sort,
mm-hmm.
and we all have opinions about it. And in that K-12 time frame, in those years, in those 13 years, We've probably encountered teachers we think are amazing and teachers that we think are horrible, teachers that we think are inept, and teachers that we hated. And yeah. So I think teaching is the one profession where everyone has experienced it for a chunk of time.
That's
and
a good point.
Everyone has a very deep opinion about what's it mean to be a teacher. And I think there's this great cynicism about teaching because people don't typically remember that amazing teacher who came every day and worked really hard. They remember the ditto. And
yes.
They remember that person.
And I have to say it, I have to steal a line from one of my students mm-hmm. and said, you know, people just want the cake. They never want to see the ingredients.
Correct.
When it comes to good education and good teaching.
Right. Correct. Correct. Absolutely. Absolutely.
And I think we've also all had those teachers where we didn't realize we had had cake until, you know, years later.
Yeah.
Oh, that was cake.
Yeah. No, it's true. That's absolutely true.
It was maybe a very, like, bland British cake or something, but it was cake.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
no,
so.
That's absolutely true. But I think there's a deep cynicism because there is just a deep cynicism towards education in general.
Yeah.
And the thing is, people don't want to talk about the real reasons why education is not effective, right? And it goes to funding and bureaucracy, allocation of funds.
Yeah.
Like all of those things, which are really uninteresting, unsexy topics, right?
Yes, and also expensive.
And expensive topics. And so we don't want to talk about them, to fix them
costs money.
Yeah.
Well, it's also, you think about then the way in which the students as imperfect people.
Right.
And what do you do with imperfect little people or imperfect teenage people.
Right.
Who are still developing, who might have their own traumas and their own anxieties. I mean, the Crispin Glover character who is gunned down at his locker clearly has mental health issues.
Correct.
And there, no one helps him.
And no one still knows how to help that child, which
yeah.
is also like a bigger issue. It's like, and that character really spoke to me because I've certainly, in my experience as a teacher, I've worked in high poverty, urban communities where violence is a reality and like, you know, children walking home could experience gang
Well,
violence.
You had that, your one school during dismissal, right? There
yeah,
was a shooting that broke out.
A gang fight spilled out from a local high school into the street because the high school was about 3 blocks from us. Spilled out into the neighborhood, and we actually did have crossfire as we were doing dismissal. We had to rush all the children back in, and some parents' cars got hit by gunfire. And some of the gang members were using the abandoned houses in the community as places to hide. And mm-hmm. of course, there's a ton of abandoned homes near us, which now are the school, which are now like 300.
Yeah, which is now gentrifying,
homes,
and,
which is insane.
And now actually that school building is going to become luxury.
Yeah.
Housing. And, yeah.
Yeah. And so I think in safe, right. Yeah. But that, you know, so I think also like we have not figured out how to effectively work with children who have mental health issues, who have traumatized lives. We haven't figured that out. You know,
yeah.
the big thing that was done in the past was either they went to an alternative school or they were hidden somewhere in the school building. And so they might have their own wing or own location. And inclusion is a beautiful, amazing thing, but we haven't funded it properly. Instead of one school psychologist who went crazy in the film, in the movie, she has a huge mental breakdown. The school counselor has a huge
yes.
mental breakdown.
Which again is part of the cynical jokes. Yeah.
But what if that school had 15, 20
yeah.
school counselors or psychologists to work with those students? How different would that school be?
Yeah.
And so, like, that's also, like, such a huge reality is that when you... And the teacher who got bit by him is saying, get rid of him, get rid of him, get rid of him. And you want to think it's a cynical response on the vice principal's part. And he's like, well, you know, what do you want me to do? He's going to be sent back, which is the reality, right?
Yeah.
Like, unless... And at that time, you know, now there is some more alternative schools. But at that time, that child would have just... You could have suspended them for a little bit of time, but he'd be back at some point in time,
yeah.
right? And, like, how do you work with that child? which I think is huge for me, right? And so those type of things aren't very exciting. Of like, wow, we have lack of funding. That's why we can't support these.
Yeah, and then if you have lack of funding, then who's the enemy?
Correct, right.
You know, it would actually be the people who paid the ticket to see the movie who have maybe their own cynical ideas about education.
And those people who hate property taxes and my child is not a public school child, so why should I have to pay property taxes and fun? You know, who cares about common good? There's no need for common good. I mean, we literally had that conversation with a man. Full disclosure, I did work at some charter schools, and there was... had an event and a man came up railing against it, and against education, and it's like common good, like,
well, and so he was talking about people good. Who it was weird because he was a homeowner who was raging about people who lived in apartments in the community as if landlords don't pay property taxes out so of strange. People's rent so those people don't pay property taxes, and they do indirectly, but it's
something we don't want to talk about. Like,
no, we don't.
Having a property tax that's used to fund education is for the common good, and that's a good thing. It's a good thing that their education is funded. But we don't want to talk about, how it's underfunded and what do we do to fix that.
And the symbolic thing, is maybe the point I want to end on, is the symbolic that the school is named after JFK.
Yeah.
And so that dream of the 60s and of maybe the mid-20th century Democrat New Deal kind of America... In a way, the film is also saying, look, this is dead, and unless you have a super teacher... It's going to stay dead.
Right. And I think to your point about the super teacher is that there is so much this belief that one teacher, one principal, one superintendent can change. And I think Ron Clark is that story is on you might be doing with your students at some point. Which Ron Clark, I do respect it, but if that mythos, right, of like that one person can really make a dramatic change, where it's actually it has to be a systemic change, right?
And so you mean Joe Clark?
Joe Clark. Oh, I'm so sorry. There's a different character person called Ron Clark. I apologize. Oh. Ron Clark kind of is famous, especially if you're in the charter school world for some work that he did.
That's something probably the students know about, not me.
They probably do.
They can teach me that.
Matthew Perry played him in a movie. So anyway, there is that whole belief that this one person, and so it does put the onus on one person to make this dramatic change, and will you be that one person to make that dramatic change, rather than thinking about the whole system that needs to be changed.
Yes, let's move on to the big five questions. The first one's, another toughie. Is it camp, retro, classic, or just an old movie?
Oof. I don't know. I think it might be... Part of it is retro, because it does feel so from the 1980s.
Yeah, and I think, when you read it in conjunction with academic articles about the representations of teachers in film, you have this real sense that it's... a product of a time, a place, a zeitgeist, or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's also, it's just, I don't know, I think it's just an old movie for me. I mean, it's not good.
Well, it also, for me, I was looking up, it also kind of, for me, sets off, in a way, it's a harbinger film for me, because it sets off some, like, after this, you're going to get, I think I mentioned before, like the
Lean
substitute,
on me,
Lean on
the
me,
substitute,
the principal,
Stand and Deliver, Dangerous Minds, Freedom Riders.
Like you kind of like
the trope of the urban.
Yeah.
It's Blackboard Jungle, but redemptive.
Right. And I think that kind of for me, I wouldn't say necessarily it's a classic, but it's like you almost need this other category of like a kind of. Is the start of this certain type of film and this certain
so
type of
so maybe it's cinematically important.
Yeah.
But not a terribly entertaining film to watch.
Yes. And that's a good way.
So maybe it's just an old movie.
Yeah.
All right, question two then. What about the social political distance?
Well, let's just start with the Ditto machine. Like, we just have to mention that. Like,
well, that's the technical distance.
Oh, I'm sorry. The political social distance.
And well, or the room test.
So, well, political social distance, we have to talk about the teacher sleeping with a student. We have to talk about the fact that, I mean, which is, it still happens, teachers.
Yeah.
But even Nick Nolte's character, who's supposed to be kind of this honorable guy, when they mention that his former student is now a lawyer, he says something like, oh, does she still have a nice ass?
Yes. Or that's part of how he remembers her as having a great
nice
ass. Yeah.
Right. And so that's ooky. Like,
yes.
That is definitely ooky.
But of the time.
Of the time.
Socially acceptable in a really gross, awful way.
Yeah.
Those times were really gross and awful.
Now, I will say, though, like, the teaching staff is diverse. The student body is
diverse. And is not one of those savior movies. And the fact that there is a variety, the students are ethnically mixed.
Yeah. And because you, especially when you start getting into these more, like, urban savior teacher films, it is a very much minority student body at that time and place. This is much more diverse, which I found really interesting. But it was much more open about sexuality in school between students and staff, which now would be
verboten,
which would be now very, very awkward. I actually taught a one credit law class. And my theme of it was how not to get fired. And at the time, because like, I just didn't have time. Special education law is so complex that I just gave like a cursory of special education law. But really what I ended up talking about is the reason why you can get fired. And at that time, they don't do it anymore. At that time, Pennsylvania Department of Education would list people by name and why they were fired.
Wow.
And the number one reason was inappropriate sexual relationships with students. And so, and that was probably, gosh, like 10 years ago now when I taught that class. Still question mark. But I think the way they handled it was kind of icky that we don't really talk about in a way. Now it'd be like, wow, that person is a pedophile.
Yes.
This time it was like, oh, you kind of made a mistake. You know what I mean? That kind of thing, which is weird.
Yeah. So, yeah, the technical distance. Well, the Ditto machine.
The Ditto machine. Smoking.
Smoking in school.
I remember when my school banned smoking in the teacher's lounge. And you could see a teacher, she would actually poke her head out of the bathroom and smoke out the bathroom window. So I do remember that. But, yeah, so there's definitely massive... differences with the Ditto machine was this crank machine. It wasn't a Xerox or photocopier.
It was like a little mini printing press.
Actually, yes.
Same principle. This then blends, I think, into the room test completely. But also, I think part of it for me is it's a film that the setting and the scenery is so overwrought in this notion of urban decay.
Yeah.
It's and the way that the building is just so crowded.
Yeah.
There's so much humanity and it's disgusting and stuff like that. That to me is also, I think, is so overwrought.
Mm.
You know. So question five, is it a keeper?
So I think in our discussion, I view this film differently than you view this film. And I think it's just experiences, right? Of like, my teaching experiences versus your teaching experiences. For me, I would keep this film. There are some things that I value in this film that I do appreciate in the film. I just think it feels like it was so piecemeal together, and it was weird how it went from like this super tragic scene of someone being shot to this like comical scene, right? And like,
yeah, of Richard Mulligan's character being dragged away.
So it's kind of like the way it was directed and pieced together was really, really strange.
Yeah.
But I do feel like, for me, as I said, a Harbinger film, I do feel actually like someone could have watched that and said, oh,
I know how to make that work.
I know how to make that work. But no one's done it, right? No one has figured out how to make it work. Instead, it's become oh yeah, those kids are terrifying. Let me make it worse and make it more scary. You know what I mean? That,
yeah.
So to the point where you get like a movie like The Principal where he's walking around with a baseball bat ready to like smash kids with a baseball bat, and kids are the enemy. And no one talks about their kids.
Yeah.
They're literally kids.
Which is, I think for me, is that aforementioned, you know, I talked about how I wouldn't want my students in the real teacher's class to watch Stand By Me.
Yeah.
Or Lean On Me.
Lean On Me.
Lean On Me, sorry. Wrong On Me movie from the 80s. Because there's the sequence, it's in, like, Welcome to the Jungle by Guns N' Roses is the soundtrack.
Yeah.
And they, basically, these students, what I'm assuming, beat a young teacher pretty much to death.
Yeah.
I mean, which is super violent the way it's shot, and also really racist in its undertones, you know. For me...
And this trope still exists. There was... I like podcast, and I was listening... One of the podcasts that I really like, they were interviewing... an actually disgraced high school principal. She had been, she was found to be taking money for services. And so like people who wanted to say, be the cleaning services, she was getting kickbacks.
Yeah.
So she got in big trouble for kickbacks. And initially she actually was using the kickbacks for the kids. Like, so she was buying clothes and food and all this other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But then she also bought herself like a high end car.
Yeah.
But she talked about how, when she became principal of that school, she walked around with a baseball bat. For real. She walked around with a baseball bat. And it was this Chicago inner city high school. And she just bragged or this is Detroit, either one. But anyway, she bragged about how she walked around with a baseball bat. And that was okay.
Yeah.
And that kind of children as enemy kind of thing. Now, so for me, in the sense of like, Nick Nolte's character doesn't view the children as enemies.
Yeah.
And
Which is nice. Which is rare.
And so,
yeah,
for me,
I'll give you that.
I like that part about him, is that he does not view them as enemies. And then also for a person who I personally kind of hit a point in my career where I was debating if I still wanted to be in education, but refound my passion and I am back in it 110%. How do you do that, and how do you find that, and how do you dig yourself out of that? So there's things for me that I think matter to me, kind of from my experiences from work as a person who supposedly worked in really bad schools where I was shot and stabbed all the time.
Yes, well, I remember at the National Council of Teachers of English conference that when you were introduced as being a teacher at the Urban League, people audibly gasped in that room.
Yes. Yes, I would always get that, oh, I'm so sorry for you kind of thing.
Yeah.
So for me, it's personally a keeper because there are some things that I really like about it.
And, well, I guess for me it's a keeper because it's really hard to find on streaming services right now.
It's a rare one, yes.
It's a rare one. But hey, if you have new old stock VHS, never goes out of. Thank you.
Thank you.
See you later.
Bye.